This is a People First Radio podcast.
Trina Orchard says an approach to intimacy and human connection called relationship anarchy is becoming especially popular among millennials and Gen Z. I spoke with the Western University prof to find out more about relationship anarchy.
My name is Trina Orchard, and I'm an author, I'm an activist, and an associate professor in the School of Health Studies at Western University in London, Ontario.
And just recently, you have written about a concept called relationship anarchy in an article for The Conversation. What is relationship anarchy?
Well, relationship anarchy is an approach to relating broadly that draws from different principles from anarchy. In the sense, it's anti-capitalist, it's anti-hierarchical, and it's very much community-oriented. And it's sort of an idea and a practice that people have introduced to get more pleasure, more equity, and also more freedom in how they relate to intimate partners, friends, lovers, family members, etc.
What do we know about who is following this approach and maybe how widespread it is?
Yeah, I think in general, relationship anarchy tends to be more prominent among people who practice things like non-monogamy, possibly who are also polyamorous, although there is a distinction between polyamorous and relationship anarchy. Younger generations like millennials and Gen Zs tend to be a bit more prominent in trying out or at least knowing about relationship anarchy. The Field dating app, which is a dating app for people who want to explore kind of non-traditional relationship structures and communities, including kink. They recently released a survey, and about half of their users were certainly aware of relationship anarchy and or were practicing it. And typically it was the folks who were in like non-monogamy, who might identify across different kind of gender as well as sexual spectrums.
You mentioned there that this is distinct from polyamory. Could you help me understand what this might look like in practice and what that difference might be?
So I think one of the primary differences is that one of the things about relationship anarchy is they really want to do away with categories like friends, family, lovers, maybe even children, because those are ways from that perspective that we have classified and assigned different kinds of value to different kinds of people in different relationships in our life. So relationship anarchy is all about kind of making that much more equitable. You know, your parents are not more important to you than your lover, you know, so it's quite a radical restructuring about a lot of things that have to do with not just relationships, but also yourself. And comparing that to polyamory, which is more about finding different ways of having sexual partners primarily, although they can be co-parents as well. But there still is a sense that friends are in one category, lovers and partners are in another category. So it's still quite hierarchical in that sense. And so the two are distinct. Your other question about what would it look like? Well, it's very variable. So there are some writings about relationship anarchy that talk about this kind of notion of a smorgasbord. I don't know if you know what a smorgasbord is, but, you know, grow up in the 80s, something, go to like a salad bar, like Bonanza or something like that. And it's like all the options. And so it's like, instead of putting friends, lovers, those are not the items on the smorgasbord. The items on the smorgasbord are the kinds of emotional connections that you aspire to, that you value, and that you want to cultivate. And so it's kind of like picking and choosing and customizing the way that you interact with different people in your life based on kind of the emotional infrastructure that you're interested in.
How can someone be sure that someone's desire to practice relationship anarchy isn't just a sort of desire to avoid commitment or responsibility?
That's a very good question. I don't know if there's like a way to determine prior to kind of protect yourself from getting hurt from someone who might be a bit sly about the reasons why they want to do this. But I don't know if relationship anarchy is always part and parcel with people who don't want to commit. In fact, I think if you want to actually approach this way of relating, it is tremendously labor intensive and it would involve quite a significant commitment and a lot of communication and checking in and evolving and ebbing and flowing. And a lot of different people are involved in this. And so I would imagine you would know fairly soon if someone was not really all that committed to it, because it's not something that I think people would enter in lightly because of the amount of like emotional labor involved.
Are there any societal factors you can put your finger on that might be driving more people towards something like relationship anarchy?
Yeah, I think that people are unsatisfied with the status quo in terms of, especially queer folks. Like this is a way of relating that was developed by a queer Swedish like tech writer, developer, producer, and so it is quite fundamentally queer in that sense. And not that everyone who is doing relationship anarchy needs to be queer. But when you say something is queer, it's also kind of just turning the heteronormative system on its head, right? And wanting to look at a way that is not about the patriarchy, but that is about equity and freedom. And those are values that a lot of us hold dear and that have kind of been compromised or threatened of late, I think, and that is the sense. And so I can understand why people would be driven to a different way of living in response to a lot of the chaos and unhappiness that might be in the world around them.
You talked a little bit about maybe some of the traditional norms or hierarchies that can exist in our relationships to friends, family members, romantic partners. What are some of those norms you feel like are maybe the most entrenched, and where do you think they came from? Why do you think we have them in the first place?
Well, every society develops a way to structure and organize relationships, as well as how we govern each other, whether it's by the government or whether it's by the rules and mores and customs that a culture develops in order to give some form to this thing called life, right? And to know who we are in relation to the other, you know, what is acceptable and what is not acceptable within different contexts. So we've always had these kinds of things. I think, you know, currently our contemporary society, at least in sort of no in many places in North America, is quite patriarchal. And where that came from, well, that was like a long story that has to do with, you know, colonization, the way we approach land, the way we approach the distribution of wealth, you know, where we come from in terms of church and state, and with a lot of settled agriculture, this is kind of an old idea, you know, and populations began to grow, more male-centric forms of power rose to dominance. And so that's kind of a very short version of where we came from in terms of the patriarchy. But some of the really entrenched things that often define at least heteronormative relationships is a sense of duty and obligation, even when times are tough, you know, in sickness and in health, right? Till death do we part. These are words that are used when people get married. You know, from an abstract perspective, it's kind of like dire, you know, and marriage has long been seen as an alliance or a contract. And that's not equitable, usually, unless the two people are really cool who are in it and really value those things and have the same amount of power. If you don't, well, there's going to be inequity and there could be abuse and there could be violence. And sadly, that is part of a lot of normative hetero relationships in our society. We know that because rates of violence against women have not gone down, you know, and so there are so many indications why some of these traditional structures are not that great for everyone.
And I guess enter relationship anarchy. What is the replacement then? What is that? How is that situation different? Instead of taking the vows till death do us part in sickness and in health, what does the relationship anarchy version of that maybe look like? I know probably the answer is going to be, well, it's different depending on who's in the relationship.
Yeah, it's going to be different. It'll look different, but I mean, fundamentally, the principles of equity and freedom are essential and also non-hierarchical. So that's very different than the traditional kind of like heteronormative kind of couple. So, I haven't practiced this in my own life, so I don't have any lived experience to be able to share with you. And I'm not sure if it would be the right kind of approach for me personally, just because of the amount of work it involves. God. Really, because you're kind of burning everything down to grow it again anew. And that is a lot. That takes a lot of time. That takes a lot of emotional investment and maybe other kinds of investment, especially, yeah, time. But in some regards, there have been some critics of relationship anarchy who've said things like, it's kind of an upper middle class, kind of bougie approach to relationships. Like, who really has time to sit around and kind of burn everything down to sort of build it up again? And, I don't have the exact answer, but just sort of in terms of I'm not presenting it as this idyllic approach, far from it. I think it's complicated, but I think it's very interesting. And it's growing in interest reflects people's desire to stretch the containers that they're in, or at least think about doing things differently that might feel better for them. And in that regard, I might go for it.
You're listening to People First Radio. My guest is Trina Orchard. She's an associate professor in the School of Health Studies at Western University in London, Ontario. We're talking about a concept called relationship anarchy. It's a way of approaching relationships that aims to set aside societal rules and expectations for what a relationship should be, and instead builds relationships around the rules that those involved in them agree upon together. Orchard wrote about the concept in a recent article appearing in the online publication, The Conversation. I feel like we've been talking a lot about this idea of relationship anarchy, maybe from the perspective of the people who are doing it, from the perspective of maybe the other people in their lives who are maybe the parents or the friends. Like, I'm wondering if you're there for family dinner and maybe your kids come home and they're telling you that this is what they're doing. What do you think are the dynamics of the relationship for people who aren't in the kind of what we would traditionally think of as the romantic partners part of it?
Yeah, I think that that's a really important question because it's like, okay, this is the idea. How does it work? Not just for the practitioner, but for their immediate circle. And I think it would probably involve quite a lot of like resource sharing, education, conversations, repeating to people why you want to do this. And I guess ultimately making sure that, people feel like they have the choice whether they want to buy into it or not. They might not want to. And I think that's perfectly okay. If it's too confusing or strange or alienating, it might take a while for some of the other folks to kind of get on board or agree with you. Some of them, they might be a little worried, like, what does this mean? It means you just have friends. You're never going to like get married and give me grandchildren. I can imagine that parents might think that or be worried about that. Isn't that what you used to want to do? Like they might be worried that someone might be trying to, string them along, which is true in any kind of relationship that might be a little bit different. There's always kind of going to be concerns, I think, from other folks involved.
It really is the fundamental thing to understand about this is the whole idea is we're starting from scratch. We're taking the traditional expectations that might come with, oh, well, we're dating, so you have to do this, that, and the other thing. It's just throwing all of those out the window, saying kind of there are no rules except the ones we right now discuss together and agree on.
Yeah, it's really about like cultivating the kind of relationships and relating that you want, and who's to say, like, everything is socially constructed, like So it can be deconstructed, right? I mean, that's kind of how things work, and that's how cultures change and evolve, and things kind of die off, just like, how we've evolved over time from, apes to the present day, if that's what you believe. And so it's a yearning for something different, and I think that is one of the things that I find most interesting, especially when a lot of times, our world really feels like it's on fire. And there's a lot of different political factions and individuals out there who are just fanning the flames of dissent, and they want us to be divided. And so this could be also seen as a way of sort of giving the middle finger to that and just say, no, I'm going to recreate my life, my inside life, my relationships in a different way that it's not going to be, beholden to the dominant power structures.
Do you think this is unique to the moment and different from other times in history? Like, if we were on the radio 30 years ago having a conversation about some new model that young people are using in their dating lives, would it be substantially different from today? Are there maybe things going on in our society that are making this more widespread, or is it confirmed to be something new?
Well, I think it's becoming more widespread right now because the way we see, the evolution of other kinds of relationships and the, same-sex marriage, families are different. There's a lot of same-sex families. So lots of our sort of fundamental social institutions are taking different shape and have done so, in particular since the 90s, which I believe is 30 years ago. What? So yeah, I just, but I mean, I think it is an important point that just because sort of heteronormative coupledom is considered kind of like the norm now, there have always been and will always be many different ways of relating and loving and identifying that fall far beyond that framework.
Is there anything else you think it's important to bring to the conversation today on this?
I think for people who want to try it out, it could really kind of rock your world and be a bit harder than you might imagine. So I think, making sure that you've got a nice support system in place, folks that you feel that you wouldn't feel ashamed to ask certain questions. And if it doesn't work, have someone to bounce those ideas off of. Or if it does, safe people who you can share your experiences with. I think that's pretty important.
Trina Orchard, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this.
My pleasure.
Trina Orchard is an associate professor in the School of Health Studies at Western University in London, Ontario. We were talking about relationship anarchy, which was the subject of an article by Orchard appearing in The Conversation.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.